Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
I'm Dave Baker.
And I'm Spandrew Spice.
Welcome to Deep Cuts, the podcast where we pick a topic and walk you through the ins, the outs, and the nitty-gritty so you can appear like an interesting and idiosyncratic person at your next forced social function. Today's topic is...
Champy, the Loch Ness Monster of Lake Champlain.
What is Champy? Well, he's the Loch Ness Monster of Lake Champlain. Act 1. He's the best around? Lake Champlain is located along the borders of Quebec, New York, and Vermont. It's a freshwater lake that spans the border between Canada and the United States. The body of water acted for many years as the border between Indigenous nations. The first peoples who called this area home were the Abenaki and the Mohawk of the Iroquois Confederacy. Original Indigenous names for the body of water include Pittawagox, Pentabok, and Bittawabagok. However, the anglicized name that has been used since July of 1609 is Champlain, named after the French explorer Samuel de Champlain. While surveying a location in 1609, Samuel de Champlain wrote that he had encountered some kind of creature in the lake's murky depths. This monster, he claimed, was approximately 5 feet in length and as thick as a man's thigh. He also claimed that it had silver-gray armored scales and that he could not penetrate it with a knife. The beast had a supposed jaw that could open 2.5 feet in length with sharp fangs and teeth on its interior. Champlain is quoted as having said,
"There is also a great abundance of many species of fish. Amongst others, there is one called by the name Chassaru, which is of various lengths, but the largest of them, as these tribes have told me, are from 8 to 10 feet long. I have seen some 5 feet long, which were as big as my thigh, and had a head as large as my two fists, with a snout 2.5 feet long and a double row of very sharp, dangerous teeth. Its body has a good deal the shape of a pike, but it is protected by scales of a silvery gray color and so strong that a dagger could not pierce them." I almost went for a French accent on that, and I decided against it the last second.
What if we just started doing the podcast in French accents? That's what we should have done when I was in France. We should have just done the whole show as I'm French Dave and you're French Spandrew, and we just did it like this. The indigenous peoples of the Abenaki and the Iroquois.
If we just committed to that and like I just did like a British accent for when I was in the UK, wherever you are geographically, you just become that.
I'm into it.
Which then the moment that it's like Dave goes to Africa, it's like, oh no, never mind the bit. The bit's dead. The bit's gone. The kayfabe's gone.
I mean, I don't know. I think I could probably pull out, like, what's that movie, Blood Diamond, where Leo DiCaprio has, like, a South African accent? I could probably pull that off, right?
Yeah, you could do the South African accent, sure.
Yeah. Like, that's not that different from my terrible Australian accent or something.
It sounds more like a New Zealand accent.
The indigenous peoples of the Abenaki and the Iroquois also have their own legends of creatures and great horned serpents that live in the waters of the lake. Specifically, the Abenaki refer to a creature called the Gitzog. Many contemporary historians have proffered that the explorer and First Nations residents were probably both encountering what are called garfish. You want to describe this fish, Spandrew?
Yeah, it's just like a shittier swordfish.
It is a shittier swordfish.
Get this thing out of my face.
It doesn't have the fin of a swordfish that goes up on the top of its head, but it does have a very long, weird-looking snout. Yeah.
But not quite long enough to be, like, impressive and define it. A swordfish is, like, it's called a swordfish for a reason, because it looks like it has a fucking sword on its face. And when you see it, you're like, yeah, this fucking fish has a sword on its face, which is probably what the first guy that saw one said. And then they were like, that's what we should call it. But this is like gnarfish or garfish or whatever the fuck it's called, because it's like, eh. You just see it and you're just like, eh, gar. That's all that's coming off of this thing to me.
However, this legend of the large aquatic creature calling the waters of Champlain home would grow and evolve over the next few hundred years. In 1819, the Plattsburgh Republican ran a story of a man named Captain Crumb. I'm not making this up.
There's a heavy chance that the next sentence of this is like, he was in the KKK, but for now, in my ignorance, I love Captain Crumb. He's my hero.
Right. He was aboard a scow on Bulguaga Bay and reported seeing a 187-foot-long seahorse, claiming that it reared its head out of the water something close to 15 feet. He claimed that the monster had three teeth, yellow eyes, and a white star on its forehead. So, you didn't walk into a briar patch on that one. That was pretty good. He's just a guy who's like, I fucking saw some shit, dude. I was on my boat, minding my business, and this fucking giant water snake that had three teeth and fucking yellow eyes came out of nowhere. And man, that shit was crazy.
Yeah, I knew I was right. I'm vindicated. Captain Crumb is goated.
We love Captain Crumb.
It's really fascinating to me because all of these stories are like the origin of them all is some guy saw a normal animal. Like with Mothman, it was like a guy saw a bird or he saw an owl. And then like mermaids is like the weird one where I don't know how you see a manatee and you're like, it looks like a beautiful maiden, but some guy saw a manatee.
Nah, dude. It's because that dude was out at sea for 7 years and he was just horned the fuck up. He was just super horned.
He was on that manatee's look fuckable level of horny.
Dude, he was out there and he was like, I have not seen anyone that is not one of these smelly ass other sailor dudes. I will fuck that. Whatever that is, I will fuck it. And then he fucked a manatee and like one of the cabin boys saw him and was like, oh God, gross. And he's like, it's a woman. I swear. A half fish woman.
They're like, wait a minute, but doesn't that mean that you fucked the fish part? And you shot him. I was just going to say, this is the same thing where it's like some guy saw like a pretty normal fish and thought it was like a beast. And it's so interesting because in all these situations, the creature is either significantly smaller than what it ends up being described as. Like they describe this large sea monster or a giant winged beast. And then it turns out to be like this tiny little animal. Or in the case of the manatee, it's like just so fundamentally different. It's like you're saying that you saw a woman in the water and it's just this giant fucking bloated sea creature. You know, just the power of the human mind to like project whatever you want to see on something when you're like full of adrenaline or like super scared. It's fascinating to me specifically because of how small the things are that they saw that they thought were these giant beasts. Like I get like you're out at sea and you see something and you just think it's like a fucking demon because you're back in the 1800s or whatever and you haven't seen all these animals because they haven't been discovered. But the fact that they see these tiny little animals and they think that they're like these giant monsters is crazy to me that the human brain can like do that.
The fact too that this specific version of the we're encountering something in the wild and it takes on a mythic proportion is like, look, Loch Ness, who knows? Maybe the Loch Ness monster fucking kills people. We don't know. But at least it's named after the place, right? It's the Loch Ness monster. Whoa, monster, crazy. Champy?
Yeah, Champy sounds like, it sounds like Fudgy the Whale. Like, it sounds like a mascot for some, like, tuna brand or something. It's like, oh, Champy.
Yeah, it's Champ. Oh, yeah, we love Champ here. In 1873, the New York Times ran an article that told the story of a railroad crew that had seen the head of an enormous serpent in the lake. Later that year, Clinton County Sheriff Nathan H. Mooney claimed to have seen a massive 35-foot-long water snake. And then in August of that year, W.B. Eddy literally ran into Champy with a steamship.
Once again, in an ideal world, they never carved Mount Rushmore on that mountain. In an ideal world, that just never happened. But in the scenario in which we did do it, it should have been Captain Crumb, Nathan H. Mooney, and W.B. Eddy on that mountain.
You don't have to convince me. The funny thing is when I was writing this script, I was like, are these all names of characters that I came up with? Like, what? These are like goofy ass names that I would write.
His name is Captain Crumb. Like, these other names are good, like Nathan H. Mooney and especially W.B. Eddy are good names, but they're like a first and a last name. His name is Captain Crumb, which implies that either his first name is Captain or that he just goes by Captain Crumb, like Madonna or something. Like, he just has like a moniker.
P.T. Barnum, based off of the hype from all of the Champ sightings, would offer a $50,000 reward to anyone that could bring the serpent to light and install it permanently in his touring show. So this is a drawing, contemporary of the time, of Champy. You want to describe this here, Spandrew?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, if it's to be believed that the garfish is the thing that people thought was Champy, it looks nothing like Champy. It looks very much like the Loch Ness Monster. In my mind, I'd have to look at a picture of the way that they think the Loch Ness Monster looks, but in my mind, this just looks identical to the Loch Ness Monster. It also looks like the sea beast in that area in Super Mario 64, whenever you drop down into like a little underground cave, and there's like a little island, and then there's water, and then there's just like a sea monster riding around in the water, and you can jump on his back and just ride around.
Yeah, I mean, picture mentally the Loch Ness Monster. It's that.
Yeah.
It's just that.
Yeah, it's like a Brachiosaurus-looking type monster in terms of, like, its head. It's like this long neck. The head is more, like, serpent-like than dinosaur-like, but the body is kind of looks like a dinosaur's body, except for it just has, like, fins instead of legs.
So, you know, over the next basically couple hundred years, there's purported sightings of Champ. People in the area claim to see him, eyewitness accounts, but there's not a lot of recorded information, right? It's just kind of more people with goofy names being like, I swear I saw the fucking giant serpent in Lake Champlain. However, as we move into the 1900s and specifically the last half of the 1900s, we start getting more and more verifiable proof of Champ's existence. We get multiple eyewitnesses who have either video or photography that accompany them. And the two main people are two women, Dee Carroll and then Sandra Mansi. So we're going to talk about Dee Carroll first. She sees Champ in 1980 and she told the early show,
we were driving along in the mid 80s, the first weekend in December, and I was looking out the window of the car and said to my husband, what's that post-like thing out there? And turned my head back, and here were concentric circles on the water moving out, and the post was gone. Now, posts don't just disappear. They float or stick up or do something. They don't just go down.
So this woman in the 80s became a big proponent of Lake Champlain's mysterious creature. Here's a photo of her wearing an oversized red hoodie that has an image on it of a lighthouse and a boat and a little island, and she's standing by the border of Lake Champlain talking to a camera, and she's motioning with her arms. They're like about shoulder height, and it looks like she's about to do that, you know, that meme of the white woman teaching people how to like hip hop pop and lock dance, you know?
Yeah.
She looks like she's doing that, you know, where she's like, hip hop is like this. We pop and we lock. We pop and we lock.
Yeah, she does like a rap about Champy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A hip, a hop, a hibbit of the hip.
My name's Dee Carroll, and I'm here to say that I saw Champy the other day. And I said, oh my lord, I better tell the world. And it'll strike a chord.
Yes, that is exactly what she said. Those are the exact words that are coming out of her mouth.
She looks like the Canadian Angela Lansbury.
Oh, she totally does. Yeah. So based off of this initial sighting in 1980, a bunch of things start happening. And you can either believe that Champy is a real creature who's come out from the depths and just wanted to say hello in the 1990s, or people really got taken with the idea of having a homegrown Loch Ness Monster. And so by the time 1992 rolls around, about a decade later, there's over 180 sightings of Champ in 1992. The most famous of those is this photo by Sandra Mansi. Do you want to describe this one?
He's real.
He's totally real.
I saw this picture and just never mind. Forget every joke I made. Champy's real.
Champ is fucking 100% real. The photo is a relatively calm body of water. 3/4 of the composition are that. Off in the distance, a tree line, a shore, and center-oriented, right in the middle of the composition, is a large snake-like entity. Whether it is Champ or fabricated or a piece of driftwood, who knows? But it is a large structure coming out of the water.
Could be driftwood. I was thinking more that it would look like something that somebody like made and like set adrift and just like took a picture of it.
Yeah, it could be. Sandra became something of a, you know, early 90s folk persona, kind of like how Bob Gimlin is with the Bigfoot, or, you know, various other people are with alien abductions. Sandra Mansi is kind of that for Champ, which is really funny to me because of the cryptids that you want to be aligned with, it's kind of funny that it's the monster of Lake Champlain.
Yeah, first of all, it's such a like C-team cryptid because it's just like, it's exactly Loch Ness Monster, right? It's the same thing. And honestly, Loch Ness Monster is like the least interesting of the really famous cryptids. I think really it's just like the name recognition and kind of like the lore behind it, of like the fact that it's like from this lake in Scotland and it just has this almost kind of like medieval type air to it. And this doesn't have that. It's like there's none of the cool cachet to it. It's just like, oh, yeah, it's just in some lake in Champlain. It doesn't have like that edge to it. And it's just not really a particularly interesting story. It's like there's just a kind of like a monster that just swims around. Like Bigfoot has all these interesting details to it. Mothman is like really creepy and scary. This is just like, oh, there's just like a little guy. He just like swims. So it's just like, it's like a really kind of like underwhelming thing to put your whole weight behind and just like let define your entire life and personality. It's just like Champy.
But there's something charming about that. Like, I really like the fact that it is somebody out there just like pulling for this C-tiered monster of just like, no, you don't understand. You don't know Champy like I do. Fucking Lake Champlain, bro. Hometown pride.
Champy. They don't love you like I love you, Champy. They don't love you like I love you. Champy. They don't love you like I love you.
Sandra Mansi told Unsolved Mysteries,
we stopped at this one place and the children were down further on the beach, having a great time. And Tony decided to go back to the car and get the camera. And I'm looking out at the lake and the lake starts churning. My first thought was scuba divers. But then it's too much. It would be too big of a group of scuba divers. But then fish. There's some very large sturgeon and big walleyes in the Champlain. So I thought, well, it's a very, very large school of fish. Then the head and the neck came up out of the water, and then the back. And I watched it turn its head and neck and look around. When it first came up, its mouth was open and I could see water coming out of the mouth. And I'm feeling like I shouldn't be there. Because to me, this thing should have been extinct 30 million years ago. But I'm not frightened. I'm in total awe and very calm. Then Tony came back and he saw it and he got all panicky, screaming and hollering at the kids to get out of the water. He helped me up to the bank and when he did, he handed me the camera and I turned around and it's still there. And I picked up the camera and took one shot.
It's so funny that it's like, it's this, we're fucking, oh my God, get away. It's like a mile away in that photo. Like it's so far away.
Get out of the water, kids. It's Champy. We digitized it and ran all sorts of computer enhancement techniques. We were looking for pulleys or ropes or anything like that, superimpositions, but we found no evidence of hoaxing, and we concluded that the object, whatever it is, was there in the lake, at that estimated distance. It wasn't any sort of superimposition. She's like verifying her own information. She's like, well, I took this picture and we checked it out and it was real. We put it through its paces. We made sure. And turns out it was completely real. There wasn't any fraud whatsoever. This picture that I took.
It was totally legit. Yeah, it was totally legit. We took it to a guy and the guy was like, this is definitely not faked.
That's so funny. The person just being like, well, we checked it out and it's real. That's all you got to do. Nobody thinks about that. Whenever you try to like come out with some kind of conspiracy theory or whatever, and people are like, I don't think that's true. Where's the evidence? All you got to do is be like, eh, we looked into it and it's actually true.
It's totally real.
We were skeptical too, but turns out it's true.
Turns out it's very real. I don't know if you're familiar, but there's a process. There's a process to these things. And we went through that process and now everything's fine.
Just the audacity.
the audacity of coming out with this like picture that you took with this claim of this monster and then just in the same breath. And we actually tested it out and it's true.
I mean, it's funny too, because it usually the scams or people that are trying to pull the wool over everybody's eyes, either they're a little bit more subtle or they are just true believers. So maybe she's a true believer, who knows? But the Bob Gimlin Patterson tape situation where like he got manipulated into being a true believer 100%. Like, it's not even subtle that that's what happened, right? Or like so many of these alien invasion things where people either they have psychotic breaks and that's what they see, or they genuinely believe things happen. Or they're, you know, like the guy we did an episode about who had that cult out in the middle of nowhere under giant rock and was the founding father of a bunch of the early UFO conspiratorial tropes and claimed that he could psychically commune with aliens. Like that guy just is a grifter, right? Like, he's a grifter, but the people that followed him, they were true believers. And that's kind of how these things usually function, is there's like a central hub character who is a bad faith actor, and then a group of either innocent or just alternative thinking people who get swept up into this, and they genuinely believe these things. And who knows, maybe some of it's real, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of Bigfoot viewers out there.
There's also like a middle ground between the two as well. You can't truly know someone's heart, but there's a part of me that believes that Sophia Stewart is in the middle, where she lied about something in a way where it can almost become true over time. Because if you say like, oh, I wrote this book in the 80s and then these people stole it from me and made a movie out of it, there's no way to really prove that. There's such a separation between the two pieces of logic. It's like, I wrote this book in the 80s and I mailed it somewhere and then this movie was made and it's clearly stolen from me, and you can't really prove a negative. So there's no proof that it's true, but there's also really no proof that it's not true. And obviously the burden of proof is that you make an outlandish or novel claim, you have to prove it's true. But for certain types of people, the opposite is also true, where it's like, you can't prove that I'm wrong, so maybe it is the truth. And then you have enough people validate what you're saying over time, eventually you can start to believe it. You could be like, man, like, I said this and I kind of was making it up, but everybody believes me. Maybe it did happen. And then eventually you start actually believing that it's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think specifically with Sophia Stewart, which we did an episode about forever ago, she's a woman who claims that The Matrix and The Terminator were both stolen from her, is that she's mentally ill, dude. Like, she just is mentally ill.
And there's an aspect of that as well, of like believing in your own kayfabe, you know, has overlap with mental illness.
And like you said, she thinks it's true at this point, but that's also because she's not well. She thinks she was engaged to Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
She claims to be Tupac's lover.
That one's true.
She also claimed that she won in court, and that is verifiably false. Like, she didn't.
Yeah.
Like, but the court cases that she claims she won got thrown out.
Yeah, but while I do believe that there's a level of mental illness, and once again, you can't know somebody's heart, especially when somebody is a liar. There's no way of really knowing what it is that they actually think or believe, or how calculated what they're doing is. But for instance, that, you know, she claims that she won these lawsuits that were all thrown out. But part of that is the fact that she actually did win a lawsuit, which was she sued her lawyers for malpractice. So she basically like went to court to try to do this court case. All of her court cases got thrown out. And then she turned around and sued her lawyers and were like, these guys fucked me over and I lost these cases because of them. And then she won that. And so if you Google search her, you can find a court case that says Sophia Stewart won this one. And if you aren't super diligent, or if you don't really understand court documents very well, you could very easily just Google that, see that, and be like, oh yeah, she won, it's right here. And then she uses that to her advantage to tell people that she won. And if people look it up, they'll find that. And then they think that that means that she won. So there is a level of like, you know, how calculated is it? I'm sure there's a level of mental illness, definitely. But there also is like, oh, but maybe she is kind of doing this more purposefully than
you might imagine. And she, you know, she is just a total grifter and she knows what she's doing.
I'm curious what you're going to think about Sandra Mansi. Let's watch this interview with her and let's see what your thoughts are on the vibe that she gives off.
Is she giving a Sophia Stewart or an Andrew W.K.?
We were on a dirt road and we stopped and we walked across the field. Now there's nothing in sight. There's no housing. It's a very rural place. And I went down the bank and I'm sitting on this great rock down there watching the children and just enjoying the day. It got kind of strange out there. It was like turbulence in the water. And then something broke the surface of the water. And even then I'm thinking, wow, that is a fish.
But was it? What many people believed Sandra Mansi saw and photographed that day was Champ, a lake monster that has intrigued and fascinated people for centuries.
I got it when it had just turned over its back. And I put the camera down and I'm watching it. It went down like this, went down, and then disappeared. So we sent it out to the photo mat. That's how unassuming it was. And when we got it back, we looked at the photograph and it was, oh my God. What did we see?
Descriptions of Champ vary, but a common belief is that it is a large, wide-bodied, dinosaur-like creature with smooth scales and a long tail. There have been over 300 sightings throughout the lake.
We finally decided that we needed to have this authenticated before we make it public. And it went to the optical college and they proved that this photograph was genuine, never doctored, never, it is what it is. It is absolutely authentic.
We have records that show that starting from the 1800s, there were newspaper reports of Champ. And then another blip around 1970 and the early 80s. The Native American people also have oral history on Champ.
You get the idea. This is basically everything we've just been through.
We decided that before we went public with this, we had to make sure that it was accurate. So we sent it off to the double secret prover society of experts that know stuff that's true, and they verified that it was real.
I mean, they did. I don't know what you're complaining about. They verified that it was true, and it was true, and that was really Champ.
I mean, I know.
Yay, nay, not into it, into it, want to give her a smooch?
No matter what, I want to give her a smooch. You know, I don't care who you are, I don't care where you're from, I don't care what you did, as long as you love me. I live by those words. She comes off to me as a pretty run-of-the-mill, like, this lady is lying. I don't think, she doesn't seem crazy to me. She seems like she just had an idea to fucking get on the news and she made this story up.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me, the down-home quaintness that so many of these cryptid enthusiasts have. You know, the like, well, golly gee, we were just walking down the creek and we just saw them there beasties. And we was like, God damn, that there's a beastie. Quick, get the camera. All right, now we got this photo of the beastie. They all kind of have that vibe to them. And so there's just different versions of like, oh, this guy's being manipulated into thinking that's a beastie. This person's in on the joke, or this person's just straight up lying. To me, Sandra, I feel like she's probably a little bit more in the middle. I don't know if she was manipulated into it because, again, this story is so small scale that there's not a lot of entrenched dogma or mythology in the way that Bigfoot or some of the other cryptids have. Where like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, personally, I don't see Champ being real. Some of these other things, I'm like, there's so much here. There's something's going on. Champ, I don't know. I like that people are obsessed with Champ, but I don't know that I think that it's real.
Here's the thing, and we've said this a million times on this show whenever we talk about these subjects, but like, I don't not believe in aliens, and I don't not believe in potential aspects of our world that are just undiscovered and we just don't know about, that are just kind of like somewhere out there. I mean, we discover new species of animals all the time, especially like deep under the sea where just There's a large area that's unexplored. I don't disbelieve that there could be some prehistoric creature that has survived in some deep depths of the ocean that we just have never seen before. But even if hypothetically some of these urban legends or cryptids or whatever you want to say they are real, that even more means that there are a bunch of them that are like fake hoaxes that people cooked up to try to gain fame and money. Like, especially if Bigfoot is real and the Loch Ness Monster is real, that means there's going to be like 100 other of these stories that are all just like somebody saw Bigfoot and was like, oh shit, like everyone's talking about this Bigfoot thing and these guys are on the news. We should do something like that. And then they come up with their own Bigfoot thing. And somebody saw Loch Ness Monster and saw how big of a cultural thing it was and was like, we should do our own Loch Ness Monster, and then made up Champ. Like, especially if those things are real, there's going to be thousands of other hoax stories. And yeah, what you said before about like, it almost seems like this is like the least creative people came up with, where there's just not a whole lot of interesting lore behind it. It's just like, yeah, we just like saw this little dude and he was just a swimmer.
But I kind of love that though. It feels like a pre-internet cryptid. You know what I mean? It's like every other cryptid got so much weirder and more interesting once the internet got involved, because everybody could share accounts, and also people who are bad faith actors who don't believe that the cryptid is real could just throw random things into the mix, which sometimes got fully subsumed up into the mythology of the cryptid. And like specifically with Champ, it's like he stopped being thought about in like 1992. It's like 1992 was his peak year, 180 sightings. And then no one thought of him again. We might be literally the only humans in the year 2024 who are like, hey guys, Lake Champlain, there's a monster in it. It's called Champy. Isn't that weird?
Well, yeah, because there was 180 sightings and there was just no momentum.
Yeah.
Nothing really happened. And all the people were like, eh, our little thing didn't turn into a big Mothman type thing.
It's so funny to me. I know I said it before, but I'm going to say it again. The fact that his name is Champ is just so funny and endearing. And also, like, you know, there's a whole section on his wiki page, which is just like, Champ has been fucking absorbed into the local culture. The West Vermont Champaneers are the, you know, basketball team of the this high school. And, oh, and the college, you know, New York, the New York Champs are, you know, he's a baseball mascot for them. And, like, that kind of is the tier of this cryptid, where like hyper localized things co-opt his legacy because it's like vaguely something people have heard about. Like, I have no doubt that there's like a local auto body shop and there's like a mural of Champ on the side of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's just also underwhelming. You know how like Bigfoot is like really big in the Pacific Northwest, and then they have like these slogans in like Washington and Portland where it's like, keep Portland weird, keep Washington weird. It's the Champy slogan is keep Lake Champlain.
But isn't that great? The scale of this is just so endearing to me, because it really feels handmade. As opposed to like there's no episode of the $6 million man where he fights Champy. You know what I mean? Like, he's just, it's not even, they would never get past, it's not a big enough cultural thing. So it really feels more like the folklore that cryptids used to be, you know, where it's just like, you know, somebody's uncle is like, when I was 17 riding my bike along Champlain, I saw Champ. He winked at me and said, make sure to take so-and-so to prom.
Yeah, that's what he does. If you get lucky enough to see Champy, he'll tell you who to take to prom.
Yeah, yeah. When you're trapped in like a love triangle, you know.
Unlike Mothman, who's, you know, his whole thing is, we gonna fuck. Champy is like, you gonna get to second base. Maybe first and a half. I also just realized how like basic cryptid names are, for some reason I never thought about before, but I was thinking about, because I was, my first thought was like Champ. Oh, it's Lake Champlain and this monster is called Champ. The first, you know, five words of the name of the lake. But then I realized that they're all kind of like that. Like Bigfoot is like, hey, this guy with a big foot He's Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster. There's a monster in the Loch Ness. It's the Loch Ness Monster. Mothman. Hey, there's a man that looks like a moth. It's Mothman.
But he doesn't even look like a moth, though. He's a butterfly dude.
Yeah, well, that's the most creative, is that they saw like a butterfly man and they were like, Mothman. I'm thinking outside the box, baby.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I think I've made it clear. I think Champ is hilarious. I love it. I'm so into it. I want to meet Sandra Mansi. She seems chill. I want to hear the story in person. Andrew, do you have any final thoughts about Champ, the Loch Ness Monster of Lake Champlain?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that is most fascinating to me, I kind of talked about a little bit of just the idea that these things are born out of people who are like partly just kind of bored and they see this like easy opportunity to get some kind of attention to themselves that could either just either lead to some kind of financial gain or just, you know, making them for a little bit feel special in a society that's like so obsessed with celebrity. And there's, you know, only like the top 1% of people are celebrities. So, you know, a great majority of people in this country just feel inadequate because not only are they not famous and rich, but also like in our country, we regard those things as being like the only things that matter. So if you're not aren't rich and famous, you're just like insignificant. Like that's just baked into our culture. And so this like weird gumbo of like, people are super poor. Everybody has these weird like identity dysmorphic issues where they feel insignificant and completely unimportant because they don't live up to this standard that only like 1% of people are able to live up to. And in this weird confluence of these two things, it's comedically very common for a thing for people to do to be to make up a fake monster. Like that's very funny to me. That these two ingredients mix together to make this thing where a lot of people make up fake monsters in our country. Like, the idea of that is very funny to me.
And they're never like, oh, we made up a monster and his name was like, the fucking Annihilator.
Yeah, it's Bigfoot, Champ, Mothman.
It's like, I need to create a monster that symbolizes the crushing levers of economic inequality in our country. I need to find a way to get myself out of poverty by attaching myself to this strange folklorish beast. Squeaky.
I saw Squeaky.
You won't even believe it, man. Squeaky, he's so fucking scary, dude. He just like haunts check cashing facilities. Like if you go to payday loans after 8 p.m. on the second Thursday in November, you'll see Squeaky.
He's just a big rubber duck.
Squeaky, dude. Squeaky.
He's real. I believe. I want to believe. The truth is out there. Squeaky.
The truth is out there. Yeah.
Justice for Squeaky.
Justice for Squeaky. Yeah. On that note, I'm Dave Baker.
And I'm Spandrew Spice.
You can find me online at heydavebaker.com or xdavebakerx on the socials. Please go buy my book, Mary Tyler Moorhawk. It's been getting some good reviews, guys. I won't say what those reviews are because it sounds self-aggrandizing when I talk about it a lot, but I'm just going to say it's been getting good reviews. So go check it out, Mary Tyler Moorhawk, wherever comic books are sold. Spandrew, where can people find you?
I'll talk about the reviews. The greatest review that Dave's gotten so far is, this book sucks, but the guy who wrote its dick is huge. That's what he was too modest to say. That review was written by me, by the way. Can't find me on social media. You know, I can't fool you anymore. I am on social media. You can find me on TikTok at Dead Boy Detective, where I talk about weird pop cultural stuff and make fun videos. If you want to pay your respects to the dear beloved Papa Price, you can go to his website, dapricewrites.com, and get his book, Deadbolt AI Private Eye. You can follow us on social media at Deep Cuts Pod on Instagram, Deep Cuts Podcast on Facebook. You can join the Deep Cuts Podcast Facebook group where we talk about the show and make memes. You can join the Discord server, bit.ly/DeepCutsDiscord, where we talk about the show, make memes, play games, and other fun stuff. You can follow us on TikTok at Mystery Treehouse. And you can check out the Squeaky exhibit that we are putting up, your local payday loan office.
Fucking squeaky.
Deep Cuts is a production by Boy Genius Media. If you'd like to find this show and others like it, please visit boygeniusmedia.com or deepcutspod.com.
If you want to join in on post-episode discussions, please join the Deep Cuts Podcast Facebook group. Finally, subscribe to our YouTube channel for additional video content.